The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now begin with oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, it's time for the government to be upfront with Nova Scotians about what is truly happening with their power bills. In 2015, Nova Scotia Power will send $35 million to Efficiency Nova Scotia. That's $35 million that is not a savings for ratepayers. It will, in fact, be recovered from them with interest. And, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia Power will profit from that interest. So I'd like to ask the Premier, will he confirm that there are, in fact, no savings coming from Efficiency Nova Scotia, and instead it's just being deferred with interest for another day?
The Honourable Premier.
No, Mr. Speaker. In actual fact, what's happened, we've seen just a few months ago that the new standalone Efficiency Nova Scotia entity, Mr. Speaker, is actually driving down fuel costs, which in turn will ensure that power rates go down. Mr. Speaker, it's working exactly as we hoped it would, which is providing competition on the fuel side to Nova Scotia Power. And I want to remind all members of this House that the efficiency tax that was put on these bills will be coming off as of January 1, and power bills will be going down.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia Power has actually written a letter outlining their agreement with the government that our deferred charges, including fuel charges of almost $90 million, should be spread out over a number of years so that they can actually profit from it, from the interest. Nova Scotia ratepayers are not saving anything. They're just pushing it forward to another day where the power company will actually get all that money back plus interest. So will the Premier confirm that someday Nova Scotia will have to pay the fuel surcharge back and the efficiency charge back to the power company with interest?
The Honourable Premier.
No, I won't, Mr. Speaker. What I will tell the Honourable Member, as we said during the election campaign, Mr. Speaker, we're going to hold Nova Scotia Power accountable. We're going to provide competition to Nova Scotia Power, and we're going to do so, Mr. Speaker, so that all Nova Scotians benefit on their power bills.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what the Premier told Nova Scotians during the election is that next year they would save $42 million. He said it in the CBC TV debate. I know, because I was sitting right beside him when he did. But what he didn't say was, in fact, they would have to pay instead $35 million to the power company plus interest. That's what was not said during the election, Mr. Speaker, and that's why it's time to be upfront with Nova Scotians and tell them that, in fact, They don't save anything. They just pushed it forward to another day, Mr. Speaker. This is a shell game. It's not a real saving. So will the Premier admit, finally, it's a shell game and put forward a real plan to save Nova Scotia ratepayers' money, not just defer it to another day?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Leader of the Conservative Party for the opportunity to remind Nova Scotians that not only will they save $42 million on the power bill, Mr. Speaker, we would even further. We put together Efficiency Nova Scotia, which is competition directly on the fuel side, which is driving down fuel costs, which means there will be more savings for Nova Scotia ratepayers.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question for you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, in April, the Liberal government announced a new website where information about provincial investments and companies will be posted. And at the time, the Minister of Economic Development was quoted as saying, and I quote, "Nova Scotians now have more access than ever before so they can understand the reasons for and the result of investments made on their behalf." Yesterday, I asked the Premier if the new big business tax break, which would cost taxpayers $30 million, will be put on this website. So my question to the Premier today is, would he provide an answer to that question that he wasn't prepared to provide yesterday?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the Honourable Member that the Minister of Economic Rural Development continues to provide leadership to ensuring that that department is the most open and transparent it has ever been in our history, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, every Nova Scotian will know when we spend their tax dollars, Mr. Speaker, how it's being spent.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, again, I didn't hear whether or not the new big business tax rebate would be posted on this website. So I want to ask the minister responsible for the website whether or not the new big business tax credit will be posted in a transparent fashion on that website.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Speaker, the large capital tax credit that we have provided mirrors a federal tax credit, the Atlantic Investment Tax Credit, which currently exists for companies within the Atlantic provinces. The federal government, through Revenue Canada, will be administering this tax credit on our behalf. Staff are currently working with our federal partners to find out exactly how much information we can disclose because of federal guidelines. It is certainly our hopes that those negotiations are going to result in our ability to be able to post that information. But again, Mr. Speaker, there is no question that all investments that have been made have been posted on that website, and I do hope that we'll be able to do that for this one as well.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia ratepayers are not really saving on their electricity bills. The government is just delaying the payment to another day with interest. $35 million in efficiency charges delayed to the future with interest. $90 million in fuel surcharges plus interest, all to go to the profits of Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker. When it comes to asking Nova Scotians to pay later with interest, the government has nothing on Leons, who are famous for that kind of scheme, Mr. Speaker. So I'll ask the Premier, before he gets up and thanks Leons for their great job in furniture sales, why not just be upfront with Nova Scotians today and tell them they're not saving anything, it's just being delayed to the future with interest?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I will again, through you, tell the Leader of the Conservative Party that Nova Scotians will be saving $42 million, Mr. Speaker, on their power bill. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member that we've set up the Efficiency Corporation, Mr. Speaker, that will drive savings on the fuel side, which in turn will lower power rates in this province, Mr. Speaker. And through you to the Leader of the Conservative Party, I want to remind the Leader of the Conservative Party, it was his plan, Mr. Speaker, that was going to free power rates. It was our plan that was going to do exactly what we said, which is drive power rates down.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, I hope the Premier read our plan, because step one was to get rid of the fuel surcharge and leave that in the hands of the power company, which actually would have avoided this whole problem. The Premier's answer is actually not to save money on power rates, but to push it forward to another day with interest, just like they do with the budget of the province. The bills are put forward to another day, Mr. Speaker. That is not a savings at all. So you know what, Mr. Speaker? The lesson here is you shouldn't make a promise that you can't keep. That's the lesson here. And Nova Scotians are going to learn it when they pay that bill plus interest. So I'll ask the Premier, why not just admit the obvious? We are going to make all these payments in the future with interest.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member that as of January 1, $42 million will be coming off power bills across the province of Nova Scotia. Why is he opposed, Mr. Speaker, to allowing Nova Scotians to pay less for power in this province? Mr. Speaker, if we had followed his plan, we would have frozen power rates and $42 million would have been in the pockets of Nova Scotia Power and not in the pockets of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Minister of Finance told the House that she never promised the tax review by the end of October and instead that the Minister expects it in mid-November. Ms. Broughton's contract says that it should be delivered on or before October 31st, 2014. So my question is, will the tax review be delivered to the Department today as is written in Ms. Broughton's contract?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And it is a good opportunity to just clarify what the process is. The woman who was engaged to lead that tax review is Laurel Broughton, and her work is complete at the end of October. So then the report will be written and published and so on. So it's off to the publisher soon.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Mr. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section 1.4 of Ms. Broughton's contract says that the agreement may be extended if both parties consent in writing. So if the report has not been delivered to the department as of today, then that means that the agreement must have been extended. So the minister must have agreed to a new deadline for delivery of the report. So now we are left wondering when is the date that the report will be delivered. So will the minister inform the House what new deadline was agreed in writing, and will she table the extension agreement with Ms.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, and I really appreciate the Honourable Member's interest in this entire subject, which is important. We're all anxiously waiting for the results of this tax, fee, and regulatory review. And Mr. Speaker, for the knowledge of the House, there has been no extension on the contract. Ms. Broughton's work is complete, and now they're putting in charts and diagrams, as I understand it, and it will then be sent to be printed and ready for release. So mid-November is the time.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, single detached housing starts in Nova Scotia are dropping, and they're expected to drop even more, quite dramatically, 57%, Mr. Speaker, over the next 2 years. Paul Pettipaw, the CEO of the Nova Scotia Home Builders Association, is concerned, as we all should be, and he's calling for the province to drop the HST on new home construction to kickstart the industry. Mr. Speaker, I'll table that article. So my question for the Minister of Finance is, what will the government do to kickstart the home construction industry in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. I do think it's really important for us all to note that there is a big decrease in the home sales, and particularly new home sales, and that is one of our major economic indicators of good health in the province. So for me, this is certainly a concern, and I think it is for all of us in our communities. But we've looked at the evidence of a tax credit for the sale of homes, and it doesn't do very much at all, if anything, to stimulate home sales. There's also a problem about what date you started at, because there are a lot of new homes on the market that could be orphaned or left out if you didn't have the right date. That happened the last time the NDP introduced that kind of a tax credit.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we're all very concerned. This does indeed indicate weakness in our economy. And, Mr. Speaker, I think that someone who is as knowledgeable as this sector as Mr. Pettipaw needs to be taken seriously. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the minister again, what assurance can the Minister of Finance give that the home builder, give the Home Builders Association and Nova Scotians that the results of her tax review will indeed provide the stimulus that this industry needs right now?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can assure the industry is that we will continue to work with them. We are more than happy to keep talking about what can be done, what their suggestions are. A tax credit we don't believe is the right way to go because it has to include the entire inventory of homes. And we really just feel that it's been improperly done in the past and not had good results in other parts of Canada and other places we've studied it. So I think the important thing to know is that with every sector of the economy, we're willing to sit and work with those people that are directly affected. And I think if I have a moment, it's important to note that this is a reflection on demographics as much as it is the economy. Both factors are very much involved in this trouble.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you today will be for the Minister of the Environment. In recent days, we've heard about a plan to dispose of fracking wastewater in Divert through Atlantic Industrial Services in the Lafarge Concrete Plant in Colchester County. And I'm wondering how long a process that is, Mr. Speaker, if the Minister could answer that, and is there a plan to dispose of the balance of that being held in Divert the same way?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the member for the question. The process for disposing of the water has gone through a pilot process. So I just want to set everyone, I guess, provide the information update that it is a clear and transparent process. All the information related to the pilot test results are available on our website. With respect to the specific question of timing, the application was for 5 million litres of the 10 million currently stored in Divert at the AIS facility, Mr. Speaker. That process is estimated to take about 165 to 170 truckloads at approximately 5 truckloads per day. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his answer. And as a follow-up to that, he would be aware also that in the Hants County area there are holding ponds that also contain contaminated fracking wastewater. Would there be a plan similarly to dispose of the water in these ponds as well?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And that's correct. There's approximately another 20 million litres in the Kennecook, Knoll areas. And the water, the 10 million litres currently in Divert, also stem from the same operation. With respect to plans from our departmental perspective, Mr. Speaker, we wait on the proponent who's responsible for disposal of the water and proper treatment to submit their application to the department. We review the technical aspects of it to ensure it's safe for the environment and the health before providing approval. So at the present time, AIS is working on the water that they have, and we're still working with and waiting to hear an actual acceptable application from the Triangle Petroleum. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Economic, Rural Development and Tourism. We all know that this month is Small Business Month and that yesterday the Canadian Federation of Independent Business released its business barometer. There was some alarming news in this report. Only 39% of business owners in Nova Scotia say their businesses are in good shape. That's among the lowest proportion of any province. Will the minister admit that this government's failure to create the conditions for businesses to grow and thrive has let too many Nova Scotia businesses down? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, it's the exact opposite. Once upon a time, small business owners used to come to government saying that they couldn't access any capital to grow their business or invest in their business because private banks wouldn't lend them money. Those days are over, Mr. Speaker, because through the small business loan program, through the credit union movement, we now see that small business can access that type of capital. Mr. Speaker, the fact is that loan program was enhanced when the Premier made a commitment to double its budget from $25 million to $50 million, to put the guarantee up from 75% to 90% to give the credit unions more confidence. Mr. Speaker, small businesses are gaining access to capital. We're listening to them directly. We're encouraging more entrepreneurship. And by doing all of that, Mr. Speaker, we will be helping not only small business, but all businesses in Nova Scotia grow.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his answer. However, this week's report showing such low confidence among Nova Scotia business people comes only 1 week after we learned Halifax fell from 17th to 38th on the list of places to do business in Canada. That fall happened in the year that this government has been in government. The evidence is piling up. Nova Scotia businesses are at a competitive disadvantage. I'm wondering if the minister can help us understand why small businesses are losing confidence in this government. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, we're hearing just the opposite. Last night I had the opportunity to attend a function, and one of the leading businessmen in our province was praising the work that our government has been doing in establishing transparency and arm's-length decision-making when it comes to investments on behalf of taxpayers. Speaker, the message we're hearing from business is that this government, under the direction of this Premier, is doing exactly what it said it would. It has taken the checkbook away from Cabinet and picking winners and losers in this province. Those days are over, and Mr. Speaker, business is welcoming the transparency and the changes.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, new home construction can be a real economic driver in the province. But Home Builders Association is concerned about the sudden drop of new home construction throughout communities across Nova Scotia. So I'd like to ask the Minister, can the Minister tell us how many Nova Scotians work in the residential construction industry?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I don't have that number here with me right now, but of course I would be happy to provide it to the member at a future time.
The Honourable the Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think what I was asking, the answer should have been there's many. There's 22,000 indirect and direct jobs. So I'll save some work for the Minister who work in that industry in our province, Mr. Speaker. But it's getting fewer. With a single detached housing starts in Nova Scotia dropping 57% last year, the construction industry is worried, Mr. Speaker, about losing their skilled trade workers to out west. And I'll table a document that was tabled earlier, Mr. Speaker, from the Home Builders Association, which contains a quote from an employee, and it reads, I quote, Well, there it is, folks. I'm moving to Fort Mac to work as a framer. It isn't great that I have to move away, but I have to go where the work is, end quote. So I'd like to ask the Minister, what assurances can the Minister of Labour give the home building industry that their skilled workers will not all need to leave for work in Alberta?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. In fact, we have taken a number of steps since we came into office to help keep our skilled workers here and to help train our young apprentices, for example. We have created the Nova Scotia Apprenticeship Agency, and we have, in fact, made it easier for them to proceed through their apprenticeship training, Mr. Speaker. In the past, our apprentices would take 2 years longer than the average in Canada to complete their apprenticeship training. And it wasn't because our apprentices aren't smart. They absolutely are, Mr. Speaker. But we've taken measures so that they can be attached to the workforce and actually get their training on time. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the Minister of Finance. In a briefing note prepared for the Minister of Finance and obtained by our office, it said Nova Scotia's economic outlook over the medium term is expected to be largely determined by the pace and scale of major projects like the National Shipbuilding Procurement Strategy. However, and I'll table that, however, the document also stresses that economic growth depends on the medium term demographic assumption that net out-migration trends reverse in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, thousands of Nova Scotians have already left the province this year. So my question is, how does the Minister really expect to benefit from these large opportunities when the trend towards out migration has not reversed and is getting worse?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And again, the economic condition of the province is of great importance to all of it. It does eventually come back to the revenues of the province and how many people are working. And so the demographics are the bottom line, and the member opposite has certainly hit on that. But as the projects come underway and get going, we know there are many Nova Scotians who will return or others who would like to come here. And I hope we'll welcome them with open arms, and I hope that we won't accuse them of being from somewhere else. I hope we'll welcome them and say, you have a job in Nova Scotia, and we want you to work and make your life here.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and of course we all share that hope, and we all do recognize that it all depends on the revenues, as the Minister said. So in that same briefing note, the Minister of Finance was advised that the barrier to economic growth poised by our demographic challenges could be overcome through, among other things, natural resource development. So in light of this information, will the Minister explain why she is supporting the Premier's ban on shale gas development, which is a new way of creating jobs and a new way of developing our natural resources?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I work very closely with other members of my cabinet and caucus, with the Premier and with the people in Nova Scotia. And we want to consult and we want to go forward in a prudent, planned, very, very deliberate manner to look at all of the resource opportunities in this province. So that's how we're going to go forward.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, emergency responders need automatic coverage through workers' compensation when diagnosed with PTSD due to a cumulative exposure to traumatic events. When I asked the Minister last week about this, she indicated, and I quote, "Any time we change our coverage, it has a financial impact on the Workers' Compensation Board's bottom line," end quote, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that. So it's been just over a week, Mr. Speaker, and I'm wondering if I could, through you, ask the Minister if her department has done any early estimate of the cost of making such a change.
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Mr. Speaker, we value the important, difficult work that our first responders do. Mr. Speaker, in fact, in this past year alone, I've had occasion to come into contact with first responders on several occasions. First, when I had my own workplace injury here at the legislature and was brutally attacked by Joseph Howe, but then sustained a minor concussion. But recently, this past week, I had a neighbour who suffered a heart attack. And I want to say that the first responders who came to his aid were excellent. I understand, Mr. Speaker, that first responders see things that we often, as regular citizens, do not get to see, Mr. Speaker, but we certainly value the work that they do.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that. I think we all have had experience through that. But can you just imagine that same paramedic going to traumatic event after traumatic event after traumatic event, Mr. Speaker? That's why we need some change, Mr. Speaker. On Wednesday, CTV News interviewed Kelly Murphy from the NSGU, and I'll table that article. Ms. Murphy said a cumulative exposure to traumatic events that emergency responders deal with take a toll, Mr. Speaker, and she said, I quote, "They come to us when we're in our time of crisis, so what they see on a day-to-day basis is crisis after crisis," end of quote. So in the last 7 months, Mr. Speaker, 24 first responders have taken their own lives in Canada. So I'd like to ask the Minister, doesn't the potential loss of life outweigh concerns over the cost of this policy change?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the member is aware, the Workers' Compensation Board recently changed its psychological injury policy to ensure benefits are expanded to be more reflective of the types of stresses that our first responders face on the job. I don't want to make any promises I cannot keep. And I think we saw that happen with the previous government, where they committed to expanding Workers' Compensation Board benefits to firefighters, and they did not keep that promise, Mr. That's Speaker. Right. And so I do not want to make promises that I cannot keep. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, it's been a very difficult road for the students and staff at Dr. W.N.A. McLeod Consolidated School in Riverton. They're paying the price for construction delays, and they're working and studying in a construction zone. and it's now believed that there's a budget shortfall of $1.5 million for the project, and the school advisory committee is concerned that the costs of fixing the existing boiler, the roof, and other general maintenance have depleted funds earmarked for renovations to the upgrade to a proper P-day at school. So my question for the minister today is, why were these maintenance issues not budgeted for in the first place, and why are the maintenance issues taking away from the renovation budget?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. As the member would know, W.A. McLeod was the school that was converted from an elementary to a P-8 school, and that required a couple of areas to be addressed. One was the infrastructure, and the other was to provide spaces to accommodate and provide the PSP. So there were two parts to the original request that came in from the board for funding, and that $3.7 million was approved. That has been passed on to the board who are administering that, and I understand that there may be some challenges with that project.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do thank the Minister for that answer. Because of the impact of these unforeseen maintenance expenses, the School Advisory Committee is worried that necessary renovations and expansions may be delayed. The Chignecto Regional School Board has requested additional funding from the province, but the board is unsure of when they will get word from the department on a funding decision. So my question today for the minister is, will the minister ensure the students, parents, and staff of the Dr. W.D. McLeod School that this funding will not be delayed any further by board mismanagement or red tape, and that the people of the community will get the school that they need and deserve?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would encourage the member to speak with the board representative, because we have provided $15 million last year, which went to all boards, a number of schools, about 60 schools received support, and it was for things like windows and roof and so on. Those requests came in from the boards. We provided that money. It's my understanding that Chignecto Board did not request any of that money for W.A. McLeod.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, our caucus obtained a list of untendered consultant work regarding the Novastar Ferry that found $7,000 was given to an individual for advice and assistance with freedom of information, application, and reviews. And I can table that. My question is, can the minister clarify what sort of advice this individual would have provided, especially since the department already has freedom of information personnel?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
If the member would be so kind as to tell us who's the individual that he's referring to, it would be much more helpful in being able to answer his question.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
The individual was Robert Doherty. I'll table that for the House. But on my redirect, maybe I'll go right to the Minister responsible for Freedom of Information. The Minister stated previously in the House regarding Freedom of Information personnel that when people leave their positions, we have other people within departments who pick up the slack, and that was the minister's words, not mine. Now, this creates confusion as to why an employee within the public service could not provide advice on these Freedom of Information requests without costing the taxpayers $7,000. So can the minister responsible for Freedom of Information explain why resources were not provided internally to meet the needs of the Minister of Economic and Rural Development?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, as I am not familiar with this exact contract that was put out there, I can't provide information. But what I can say is I find this question confusing, because on one hand, the Conservatives are complaining that we're not providing freedom of information. Are you guys done? On one hand, I find this question confusing, because the Conservatives want us to provide information within the time frame allowed, and when they don't get it and we actually move to resources outside of government to provide that, they start complaining. They can't complain on both ends, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of PIR. Mr. Speaker, as of July of this year, there was 344 bridges identified to be in poor or worse condition. A lot of these bridges are in rural communities, Mr. Speaker. A letter dated July the 4th from the department stated, and I quote, "Bridges will be looked at on a base-by-base basis when they have reached the end of their functional life to determine if they are still required as part of the road network," end quote. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, which bridges has been identified as not worth repairing?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. The reality is, and this is something that I've spoken about many times, we've got hundreds and hundreds of bridges. Obviously, when their timeline comes to an end, we have decisions to make. At that point, on any particular bridge, we will take it on a case-by-case basis. We'll consult with the community, Mr. Speaker. We're in tough fiscal times. We have to make tough fiscal challenges, and the reality is, if there's an alternative in an area where we don't have to replace an expensive bridge that's not used and there's not a high number of traffic, then we'll have those conversations. We're not imposing that on any community, Mr. Speaker. We're going to have those conversations. We've got to make tough decisions, but we're going to make sure that our road system's in good shape, and we'll certainly continue those conversations with Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, rural communities rely on these structures in cases of emergency, personal use, and for transportation of goods and services. They are a vital part of the road network. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, when the time comes when residents and business, will they be consulted and have a say if their bridges stay or go?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Mr. Speaker, if there's a bridge that is required for emergency purposes, transportation purposes, anything to do with the community, then of course that information is at the forefront of what the decision process would be. So with any decisions, just like bridges, just like our road work, anything that we're going to do in transportation, Mr. Speaker, we will consult the public first and foremost, in particular those communities that are impacted. These are honest conversations we're going to have with Nova Scotians, and we'll allow them to be part of the decision-making process. Thank you very much.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. When the South West Shore Development Authority declared bankruptcy in 2011, it owed its creditors nearly $2.8 million, including many small businesses and contractors from the Yarmouth area. In April 2013, my friend and colleague, the Honourable Member for Yarmouth, rose in the House and asked the former Minister of ERDT, quote, "Will he take the necessary measures to ensure that the small businesses and their employees receive the money that they are owed from the South West Shore Development Authority?" So my question to the minister, will this minister of ERDT, I'll table that by the way, will the current minister of ERDT take the necessary measures to ensure that small businesses in Southwest Nova Scotia receive the money that they are still owed from the South West Shore Development Authority?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Speaker, it's quite unfortunate what took place with this Regional Development Authority. That authority no longer exists. In fact, the province has moved towards regional enterprise networks, which I can say, Speaker, has much more stringent controls to ensure that some of the unfortunate situations that we saw in a few of the of these RDAs is not going to happen again in the future. We're going to ensure that there's appropriate training given to the board itself, that there's going to be independent audits, that they're going to hold separate bank accounts for all the projects that they're working on, and as a result of that, that there will be certainly more transparency and more accountability when it comes to these economic development agencies.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Minister, for that answer. But it still falls to the point that there are still a number of creditors that are still waiting for some funding. One of those creditors is Garion Construction, which helped build a beautiful school community center at École Panama. Being held in a confidentiality agreement, Garion Construction cannot disclose the particulars of a settlement that they did receive. However, after the settlement, the owner of Garion noted in the Chronicle Herald, quote, "It's not what we were originally owed. We're still a creditor of SWASDA," and I'll table that as well. The good member for Yarmouth advocated in this House for Garion to be paid close to the $400,000 that was owed, but we know this hasn't happened yet. So my question to the minister, is he willing to review the matter and help find a solution once and for all in order for Garion and the rest of the creditors to be paid their full amount?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Speaker, as I've indicated, the circumstances that the member speaks of predeceased our government. In fact, I believe it may have even gone to the former administration he served in when some of these unfortunate incidents took place. As I've indicated, those RDAs have been wound up. We are now moving towards the Regional Enterprise Network System, which I can tell you, Mr. Speaker, is going to give much more accountability to the people of Nova Scotia. We're working closely with our municipal partners in establishing these regional enterprise networks to ensure that not only are they working with us to do economic development, but that transparency and accountability to taxpayers is paramount.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Agriculture. When the NDP government moved to shut down small businesses in 2013, the Liberal leader called the situation absurd. Instead of growing their businesses and serving their clients, these small business owners are forced to focus on fighting an absolutely senseless law, he said in a newspaper story at the time, and I can table that. The question is, will the Minister of Agriculture admit that what is happening to small turkey processors is absurd, and that they would be better off growing their businesses and serving their clients?
Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This is indeed a very important topic to rural Nova Scotia. It is a very important topic around food safety as well. Under the Act and the regulations, the Turkey Board has the authority to shut down operations that aren't approved by either federal inspection or provincial inspection, and that's what happened in this case. We are presently working with the Turkey Board to make some changes in the process. However, I also want to point out to the member that was a lawsuit filed in 2002 regarding the processing of turkeys and poultry in a non-licensed facility. That was won by the Turkey Board. It was appealed again. It was again won by the Turkey Board. So this regulation has been tested in court and indeed did stand up.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his answer. And in the same article that I just tabled, the Liberal leader also said, unfortunately, you can't legislate common sense. But in this case, the Premier has the authority to rein in the Nova Scotia Liquor Corp and put a stop to what is quickly becoming a needless headache for this government. Will the Minister let common sense prevail and use his authority to allow small turkey processors to continue doing business?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, maybe the member didn't get the message. This is about food safety. This is about a court case, indeed, that tested this in the past, and it did go through court. It was appealed, and the people and the Turkey Board did win the case both times, and I can't stress enough, this is about food safety in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, in August, Nova Scotia lobster industry was caught off guard by the Fisheries Minister's announcement that he would impose a 5 cents a pound levy starting this fall. A few days later, we found out that in the Minister's excitement to announce the new levy, he had misspoke. And in fact, the 5 cent levy would only be imposed on one mystery region of Nova Scotia, with the rest of the province getting a 2 cent levy. But, Mr. Speaker, in the past 2 weeks, the Minister has backed away from this levy promise. In fact, on October the 14th, in this House, the Minister said of his proposed levy, and I quote, "I have no idea what it will be called at the end of the day," end quote. So my question for the Minister of Fishery is, if the Minister is no longer just looking at a levy, what other options is he considering to raise funds for the marketing of lobster?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This is a very important topic in the lobster industry. And indeed, it's about the price at the wharf. That's the end of the day. What we're after here is a higher price at the wharf and a higher price for that very valuable product. Lobster presently is viewed as a commodity product rather than a quality product that it really should be. And we are in the process of consulting with industry on a process that will put money into marketing, that will make this happen. But we need to work with industry in that behalf. and in the past has opened all kinds of great ideas, and the levy is a great idea. There's some buy-in from industry, but not all industry agrees with it. So we want to put a system in place that will work for all the industry and indeed put a higher value at the wharf for the processors and indeed on the international market for Canadian, in particular Nova Scotia lobsters.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne.
Mr. Speaker, it's been a year since the Maritime Lobster Panel released its recommendations. And while PEI lobster fishermen are voting this week on whether or not to accept a 1 cent a pound levy, in Nova Scotia, the fishery minister doesn't really know what marketing program will look like yet. So my question for the Minister of Fisheries, can the Minister of Fisheries tell this House specifically what consultation he's held in the last year with industry members on the lobster panel's recommendation, and can he table the list of those meetings by the end of today?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much. We're in the process of working on the pilot project we talked about, which is a key part in this whole process. And in the fullness of time, I will provide that information to the House when it's appropriate. And thank you very much for the question.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much. My question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. In August of 2011, the Department of Natural Resources issued an action plan for implementing the Natural Resources Strategy. According to a September 2nd briefing note prepared for the Minister and obtained by our office, the action plan items currently overdue are, quote, reports on the state of biodiversity and the state of the forest, in a redesigned integrated resource management process and an evaluation of effects, implementing an annual allowable cut. Will the Minister update the House as to the current status of these action items?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We will be releasing an update on the Natural Resources Strategy probably sometime after the Legislature has finished its session, this current session.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
You know, Mr. Speaker, the Minister has had a year to take charge of those strategy items. It seems like the things are starting to get a little blocked up, so I'm hoping that by November that things will be available to us. As I've said, in light of these new delays, will the Minister instead commit to providing a full and complete update before the end of 2014, maybe by November, so that Nova Scotians can judge for themselves whether the strategy is on track or not?
Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Our focus coming into this government was to create an air of transparency when it comes to land use and management in this province, and to create a high level of engagement and trust with our population. For the first time in the history of Nova Scotia, when it comes to long-term allocations on our Crown lands, Mr. Speaker, we have released maps for everyone to see in Nova Scotia. That's the first time that's happened. And Mr. Speaker, we are working on new models of engagement for stakeholder groups and communities all across this province. It's something we're very proud of and we're getting a lot of positive response from as well.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Education. The Liberals campaigned on a promise to start reviewing education curriculum in their first year of government. I'll table that. Then, a few months after getting elected, the Minister announced a broad review of the entire education system. According to the Minister, you can't just review curriculum. She said, and I quote, if you're looking at curriculum, then you're also looking at what we offer, how we offer it, the length of time students have to commit to that particular discipline, and the outcomes that we expect. My question for the Minister of Education, why did the Liberal government commit to a curriculum review in the first year of their mandate if the minister knew it couldn't just be a curriculum review, but a review of the entire education system?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to the member for the question.
I find it strange that the member would want us to do a review of only one part of a huge, complex system, and that's public education.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, that was not the point. The point was, once again, a hollow promise that was made during election and then a change afterwards. In February 2014, when the minister announced the sweeping review of the education system, she said, and I quote, "It's my hope that some of those changes may be implemented early in the 2014-15 school year." Now the minister is saying it will likely be next September before any changes from the review are brought in. My question for the minister is, why is she asking Nova Scotians to now wait 2 full years into the Liberal government's mandate before seeing any changes to the education system, when before the election and shortly after she said it would happen within a year?
Honourable Minister of Education.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I would say that we certainly have embarked on a very comprehensive review of public education. We had that report tabled yesterday, and I would say to all members in the House that I did provide a personal invitation to both of the critics from the opposition parties to come to the briefing yesterday so they could learn firsthand what the panel said, what the media were talking about. And I believe, Mr. Speaker, that many of the opposition, NDP opposition questions could have been answered had they been there.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last year the Department of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal took the undertaking of replacing the Sydney River Bridge. A company from outside Nova Scotia was given the contract, and the local people and the unions were not happy that this happened. But, Madam Speaker, that company came around and realized the expertise of some of the employees and workers in Cape Breton and did get some work. My question to the minister, will the Sydney River Bridge be completed on time and on budget?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It looks like the closers are in the ball game here for question period. With respect to the Sydney River Bridge, the member and I have had a very good dialogue with the trade unions that were part of the discussion on the Sydney River Bridge. Without question, it is good news when the company Caldwell and Ross from New Brunswick indicated to us directly about the quality of the local content here in Nova Scotia. So that's certainly good news for the province. I can tell the member that the schedule is in impact. There was a few hiccups early with the superstructure. They're on target to be open in December, and they are on target to be on budget. We'll keep the House updated, but right now it looks pretty good. Thank you very much.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on a point of order, again today in the House, when the statements by members were going on, the Minister of Natural Resources got up and I believe took time to talk about issues in his responsibility as a minister. Easy for me to say. But, Mr. Speaker, I think he has an area to do that in, and it's not right where he's doing it. I'd look for a ruling from you, Mr. Speaker.
I'll take that point of order under advisement, and I'll report back to the House. The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I also rise on a point of order. I would like to express my disappointment in the Minister of Education with her comments yesterday and today with respect